now Eddie from Glendora.
My name is Ed, and I am an alcoholic. You probably remember me better as Joey Dolan, the boxer. In 10 days, you can get back in full control. Before I get started, I got a couple of little things. It's kind of become a tradition at this particular convention, and one of them is that I'd like to introduce somebody. And I have a friend who is one of my favorite friends in the entire world, a super member of AA, somebody that I love very, very much, my girlfriend and also my wife. Jenny, would you please stand? If you're new here tonight, keep coming back. And something else that kind of blows me away, because this is a program where time plays great significance. Even if you're incapable, eventually you learn to love with all your heart, even though you didn't know you were capable. And 21 years ago tonight, a man walked out of a state penitentiary, and he's here tonight. And that's Johnny. Would you please stand? And I understand they're coming back for him tomorrow. There's a lot of new people here tonight, and it's very difficult. Time is a thing. As someone once said, how does it feel to be sober 30 and a half years? That's really no problem. It's the days that get you down. Nothing to it. And 30 years ago and 6 months ago, tonight, I staggered all 118 pounds of me with my DA hairdo, my pants up to here, my rusty zipper, my eyes in backwards, accidentally into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in Burbank. And a man who used to live in Beverly Hills happened to be the speaker that night. 30 years ago and 6 months tonight. And would you believe that we're both here tonight? And that's my main man, Chuck, sitting in the front row. And if he hadn't have showed up that night, God only knows where I'd have been. I've been here ever since. I know it doesn't sound, you know, too cool, but above my television set and above my little lamp above my television set, I have a picture he doesn't even know I have. Every once in a while, I look up. I get tears in my eyes, and I still say thank you. I don't know if that means anything to you, but it just blows me away. I didn't have another day. And here I am 30 years and 6 months later. How many people do you know in Alcoholics Anonymous that have been sober over half of their entire life in Alcoholics Anonymous? I am one. Is there any others in here that have been sober over half their life in Alcoholics Anonymous? And if you don't think we're blown out of our minds, you're crazy. Absolutely crazy. You know. And it isn't what's happened up till now that's exciting. It's that if I keep coming back, man, it's going to even get better. I know that's hard to believe. And if you're new here tonight, one of the things that's exciting to me is the fact that I stand up before you. We have a fairly large meeting here. It's almost as big as the Pacific Group. As you look up here, you know, I say to you, my name is Eddie and I'm an alcoholic. And I know if you're brand new, you may wonder why it is that we're so excited about it. We're alcoholics. You know, you don't hear anybody getting up saying, I have tuberculosis. Wow, I got carcinoma. I'll be dead in a week. And the reason we say that is that now that we really are, we're anonymous. We don't look like alcoholics. And there was a time when all of us looked like alcoholics, but we weren't. I never met anybody in my life who looked like they were alcoholics who ever said they were. There's only this crazy bunch of people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And some of you who are new here tonight might get a misconception that Alcoholics Anonymous has taken over the world. There's a lot more of us out there than there is in here. And they're walking around tonight. But at least I'm not an alcoholic, you know. And trying to explain what we have to a practicing alcoholic is like trying to explain motherhood to a bull. Ain't no way you can tell him. Ain't no way you can tell him. I have a lot of advantages in as much as that one is I'm Irish. And if you're Irish, you don't have to wonder if you're alcoholic. You automatically are at birth. If you're Indian, you're automatically alcoholic. And I'm so grateful to be one. And I would like to say that I've always known it, that I just waited to come here one day. But the day before I walked into the Burbank meeting, I had no idea that that's what the problem was. And what blows me away tonight is the fact that now that I really know that I am, it's very difficult to tell those who look like I used to look what it is like to be like this tonight. You know, they look at you and they say, what do you got? You know, the hardest thing in the world to do if you have to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous is to talk to a normsy. I'm not talking about an Al-Anon. I'm talking about a normsy. Al-Anons are not normsies, you know. As I heard Elsa say years ago, Al-Anons are alcoholics without allergies, you know. But if you want to do something, when you get back, try to explain to a normsy what it is you did this weekend. And they'll say, yeah, but what did you do? They don't understand. But we understand, you know. There was a time when I didn't understand, and there was a time when I did understand, and I couldn't understand why they didn't understand. Now I understand they don't understand. And that's okay. I've heard people say that we were born alcoholics. That's all right with me. I don't care. We're born alcoholics. I've had people say you are born with it. Okay, I'm born with it. Other people say, no, you develop it. This is how you become an alcoholic. You know, okay, you develop it. So I finally figured it out one day. I was born with it, and then I developed it. And there's a man that lives out here on the desert, works with a lot of little kids, who says alcoholism is, and I am, and that's good enough. It don't have to make any difference, you know, why I am. I'm so glad to find out that I am. I don't have to do that anymore, you know. Hardest thing in the world to do is to explain to your non-alcoholic neighbor, you know, come home sometime. Just try this sometime when you come home from work. Go next door and knock on your neighbor's door. I'm back home again. You'll say, well, you're crazy. But if you're an alcoholic like me, that is a miracle. I used to leave the house on Monday and get back on Thursday. And then my first wife used to say, where have you been? Like I knew. I had no idea where I'd been. You can't look like this unless you've been having fun. And then if I had my head in the bowl, my wife would come in and I'd say, oh, don't get on me. I got to do it again tomorrow. And then people say, what do you mean we're insane? Walking into a propeller and then going in and trying it one more time, knowing you can make it this time. One more time. Boy, that used to be the old jazz thing. One more time, man. Go and do it one more time. Those of us that use drugs and alcohol used to have expressions we used. Ripped, tore up, smashed, wasted. And if you've noticed anybody under 30, when they get here, they're wasted, smashed, tore up. I mean, when you get here under 30, you are tired. Nobody's going to get here under 30 unless they're dying. You know. And how many times have you ever heard of, you know, a lifeguard down at Venice? That's a good place. Where the debris meets the sea. Serenity Sam told me that. And somebody's drowning in the ocean. Did you ever hear a lifeguard say, "How old are you?" I figure if you're old enough to die, you're old enough to learn to live. That's why I'm here. I'm here because of a way of life. I heard my main man a long time ago say something. He said, "We're not here to stop drinking. Actually, we're here to learn to live a way of life that doesn't include alcohol and or drugs." And that's unbelievable, because I don't know where you came from, but I'm the kind of a guy that was raised in an environment where drinking was part of the deal. When you're raised in an Irish family, I mean, there's the three things you got to learn if you're going to be an Irishman in an Irish family. You got to learn to drink, you got to learn to fight, and you got to make love. The only problem with us alkies, we do it all at the same time. And yet we still have kids. I never had figured that out. Unbelievable. I was raised in a family where the kitchen was the only place anybody ever went. My dad, my mom, my dad, you know, came to Alcoholics Anonymous when he was about 73 or 74. And I remember one night in Hollywood, this was really a mind blower. I went up to, Chuck was a speaker that night, and I went up to Chuck, and I had my natural father with me, which is whatever that is. You know, I never liked the old guy. Even when he got sober, I still didn't like him, you know. And I brought him to a meeting one night, and he looked at me so funny, because I went up to Chuck, and I said, "Chuck," I said, "Dad, I want you to meet Dad." And my dad went, "What the hell does that mean?" He never did figure that one out. Never did figure that one out. But my dad got it. My mother died of cirrhosis of the liver, you know, which we found out later was a family disease. In my family, everybody died of cirrhosis of the liver. We didn't know what caused it, but everybody died of cirrhosis of the liver. And everybody drank at the kitchen. The old man would drink, we'd all try to drink with him. And I know there's a lot of people here from the Windsor Club. And every time I go over there, I just absolutely get nostalgic, because on Windsor Street, right off of Brand Boulevard, about a block farther down the street, I had my first drink. Now, up to that time, let me tell you what happened to me. I was a little kid with no problems. I didn't have to be smart, tall, didn't have to compete with anybody, just eat peanut butter sandwiches and run around all day long. And as I started to get older, I began to find out that in this world, you've got to go out and make it one way or another. You've got to be there with sports, football. You've got to be tall, good-looking, and make it with the girls. You've got to be able to do something so you don't have to just be nothing all your life. And I don't think there's anything in the world that plagues the alcoholic worse than the fact of being nothing and you don't want anybody to know it. So you've got to really be something. Drives you crazy. I'm not really anything. Yes, I am. All my life, you know, I was always afraid, you know, that I was going to be nothing. And I used to go to the movies. And one of the guys, any of you older people, and thank God there's some older people here, will remember a guy by the name of Tyrone Power. I used to go there when I was like 13, 14 years of age, and I'd go to the movies, and I had pimples on my face. I had this great big nose, carrot top hair, and liver lips. And I was getting at the age of puberty. That's when you're supposed to start going out and making it. So I'd go to the movies, and I'd sit down, and I'd see movies like Zorro. And there was old Tyrone, 6'1", black wavy hair, black mustache, beautiful broad shoulders and cute buns. I don't know why I noticed that, because I'm not that way, you know. If I'd have been that way, I'd have gone 8. I'd sit there in a movie, and he'd always, at the end of the movie, would wander off with some beautiful punk-suitinous female. And I'd wander home with my look in the mirror. And I maintain, it doesn't necessarily mean anybody's going to carve it on walls, but I maintain that the one big difference between being an alcoholic and a non-alcoholic is that we need a drink before we ever have one. We need something. I have met the most beautiful women and the most beautiful men in Alcoholics Anonymous when they're new and they feel ugly and unworthy. And you look at them and say, yeah, but you're beautiful. Oh, no, I'm not. I'm garbage. You ever have a newcomer call you on the phone? Brand new one. I got one that calls me about four times a week. First thing out, it says, I'm not bothering you. I said, yes, I was about to walk on the pool. And then they say, what is the core of my disease? It's the fact that I know I'm nothing, and I got to prove to you I'm something. When you know you're nothing, it's hard to be something, so you got to work at it all the harder. So when I took my first drink, something happened. I don't even know how to word this. I feel like I've been edited. But a two-inch something. Any of you who heard me can slip the word in there. And you can pour alcohol on it and make it into Robert Redford. Now, when I drank my first drink, even though I was a little kid, with no tolerance for alcohol, I immediately felt the magic that only alcoholics feel in alcohol. There I was. What you say, baby? Black curly hair? Pimples fell on the floor? Mike Ross tells me he always got shorter. I always got taller. And there I was. And you know that something in my unconscious mind said, from now on, you never do anything without first getting in spiritual condition. You want to go play a little golf? I'll be right with you. You want to go fishing? I'll be right with you. You want to make love? I'll be there in a minute, honey. Always have a drink. Because if I don't, there's nothing there but big nose, carrot top hair, liver lips. And it's amazing what a little alcohol can do. And yet there are people in this world who say, why do you drink? If any non-alcoholic ever got out of alcohol what I got out of alcohol, they'd be here tonight with their hands up. They wouldn't be roaming around. Did you ever watch a non-alcoholic drink alcohol? They order things like martinis. They eat the olive. And they talk. And then they leave and some alky drinks it. Ooh. I work on the premise that the more something will do for you, the more it'll do to you. If it won't do anything for you, it ain't going to do anything to you. And I'm convinced of the fact, whenever I hear anybody, and I hear this all the time in Alcoholics Anonymous from people, and I'm not any psychoanalyst or anything of that nature, but this is what I hear. I'm just absolutely tickled to death about being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not too happy about being alcoholic. And you know what that means to me? That means that one of the things that makes me alcoholic in the first place is the fact that I don't feel as good as you, and alcohol has made me better for a period of time. It's in the summertime. It's July the 15th. I'm out in my backyard barbecuing. I'm turning over the hamburger, and I'm having my sweats. I look over the fence, and there's my neighbor over there having a cold can of Coors. And he's drinking it and looking at me, saying, I can do this and you can't. Mm-hmm. I hate him, but I'll just go to a meeting. That's what I'll do. I'll go to a meeting. That's what I'll do. I'm glad to be here, but I'm not really glad to be, because I'm not as good as him. And I'm convinced of the fact that the reason that non-alcoholics are non-alcoholics is because they don't get out of alcohol what I got out of alcohol. There's no magic in it. As my friend from... in West Los Angeles, some of you may know him, says there's no boom in it for them. Absolutely no boom in it. But there was boom in it for me. And from that day on, and through everything I ever did, alcohol was a part of my life. And for some strange and paradoxical reason, everything will figure it out, is that it works. It really works. And there's nothing in the world, I think, more difficult than to tell an alcoholic that the alcohol's working, that he shouldn't be doing it. Because when it's working, man, go do it. As a matter of fact, if there's anybody in here tonight that's still working, go out and come on back. Don't stay here. If it's working, man, get out there. Go to them bars and say, here I am, the world's greatest lover. I'm back. You know? And the funny thing about it is that we who are alcoholics, we know we're great lovers. We're a little preoccupied with drinking. But we're great lovers. But any woman in this audience who's ever had anything to do with a practicing male alcoholic knows that to make love to a practicing male alcoholic, you got to be fast. Because making love to a practicing male alcoholic is like kissing a dust buck. You got to be quick. Because when we're ready, oh, we're not going to be around long. You got to get us on the way down. Because even though we're married to you, we're not there to that kind of hanky-panky. We're there to drink. As my friend Ray always says, let's stay here and have some fun. That's right. Today, I'm not an acronym anymore. Boy, why I was when I got here. I was here, I come here. I was the young people's meeting when I arrived, boy. There were some old people here. Christ Chamberlain was in his late 40s. There's some old ducks. They had one guy out there in the Burbank group, must have been in his 50s. And I thought, man, you know, I mean, well, you get that old, why drink anyway, you know? What the heck? But boy, I'll tell you, it really has changed. Because now all my people have showed up. That's us who smoke them non-habit-forming cigarettes. Hey, man, what you say, babe? You know, marijuana teaches you instant Spanish. I will demonstrate. ¿Qué pasó? I don't even know what it means, but I learned it. You immediately start calling your mother man, man. And marijuana makes your hair grow. Have you ever seen anybody smoke grass and have short hair? Somebody said today, it looks like you're still on it. But I smoked grass that was so good that I closed my eyes and feel it grow. Let me demonstrate good grass to you. Where do you want to go, man? I don't know. Where are we? That's good grass. Good grass, man. You and I all know that if you drink alcohol for long, long periods of time, and according to the book on pharmacology, it is ethanol, and it is a depressant drug, and it's addictive. If you drink it long enough, all kinds of physical things start happening. Cirrhosis, pancreatitis, beriberi. I don't even know what the hell beriberi is. Sure sounds good. Dropsy. Can you imagine that? Everything goes to the bottom. You get fat ankles. But you can smoke 14 boxcars of marijuana and never get any of them things. And you hear the young kids today, I hear them all the time saying, marijuana's better than booze. They're right. It really is better than booze. It don't hurt you. Oh, bushes follow you down the street. Or you go out to the football game and the quarterback always assembles the team and talks about you. Or even worse, you're driving down the street in your lowrider and somebody's in a phone booth. You don't know who they're calling, but you know who they're calling about. I have since learned, since I've been a member of this fellowship. I also put it in excellent words. Looking back, I'm a genius. I'm not, you know, too sure tomorrow, but looking back, I'm a genius. I'm convinced of the fact that any time anybody gets wee, you're going to have to go down there. I've been to these deals before, you know. And I'm going to tell you, you know, by the time, you know, sleeping is hard in these places. Even if you go to bed, you can't sleep. You're hot like this. Oh, somebody's talking over there, you know, something like that. And by the time you leave here to go back Sunday night or whatever it is, you know, you're driving your car and saying, wow, this AA is really terrific. And about Wednesday, oh, my God. And I've learned that if you go up there, you got to go down there. And marijuana is no different. Absolutely no different. I've discovered in Alcoholics Anonymous that none of us can walk around like this all the time. Anybody that does is on Valium. They're not here. They're not even there. You know? Because alcoholism is not a Valium deficiency, I found out. But I discovered a lot of other little things, you know. You know, and I'm not, it all had to happen just the way it had to happen. And I'm glad because it got here a lot sooner, chronologically. But I smoked them funny cigarettes. And when you're used to feeling a certain way, you get into sort of living by modern chemistry. And my little buddy Mike, he's in here somewhere. He's from Camarillo. That's the city, I want you to know. Not the institution. Always says that we find chemical serenity. We feel good. And when you start smoking and funny cigarettes for a long period of time, you do get a little funny. You get a little paranoid. You're always looking out the back window. And you're always getting spooky. And people ask me questions like, when did you smoke marijuana? I smoked it when it was dope. They put you in the slam, man. They didn't care whether you had heroin or marijuana. You went to the slam, straight to jail. And you were spooky, man. You know, there was the man who got your stuff from. That was the man. Then it was the man. That's the man you had to watch out for. Is it the man or the man? You know, we were really clever in our language. No, that's the man. Oh, man. Hey. We're cool, man. We are cool. And then there are all kinds of... Any of you ever take any amphetamines? I mean, except the obese ones. They give you energy. Oh, man. And if you take amphetamines, I want to tell you, they do make you sexy. Ooh, you get sexy. Oh, you want to make love to the whole world all at once. There's only one problem. You get up so far, you can't get out. I remember going over to see my girl. First time I got wired, I got over there and I said, I'll be right back. Don't go away. And when you get wired like that, you feel so good. You just love, I love people I didn't even like. You feel so good, you know. And amphetamines, you know, there's no hangover to amphetamines. You just drop 3,000 feet all at once. Boom! Boom, 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 boom! Then somebody lays something in your hand, man. You say, what's that, man? He says, it's red, man. I said, it's red, but what is it, man? He says, red, man. He says, you drop it, man. You drop it, man. And pretty soon you quiet down. Then you feel good again. And your lady wonders why she's not getting any. How can you have any when you don't know where you are? And it's a vicious cycle. It's a vicious cycle. Because the longer I try to make myself feel good by taking things and putting them into my body, the more difficult it becomes. To where eventually, and those of you that are new here, recognize your own dialogue. Those of us that drink to get well are not drinking to have fun anymore. You know what I mean? Why are you drinking in the morning? I'm getting well. Don't you know that'll kill you? That's the stuff that's doing it to you. My mother-in-law used to tell me. She said, if you don't stop drinking, you're going to die. I said, if I don't get a drink, I'm going to die. I think when you can thread a sewing machine when it's running, you need a drink. Boy. I don't know about you, but I used to get quick. I had the whips and jingles and whips, man. You think I move around now, you should have seen me then. Good God Almighty. I used to catch flies nobody else even saw. Quick. very difficult to pay attention to, you know, the philosophy of living when somebody else is talking to you, Eddie. Good living is dangerous. It don't take long. I had a wife, kids, all that kind of stuff. If I'd have known what I know now, when I married that girl, I'd have said, hey, I want to lay something on you, babe. I got a terminal disease. I'm dying. I'm going down the tubes. In a few years, I'll be wet in the drawers, laying on the floor. I'll be going to jail all the time. Cops will be coming home at night and saying, we got him again. I'll be knocking on my own door saying, is this it? You still want to get married? But see, I don't know that. I think I'm having fun, man. This is going to be it. The funny part about it is if you use drugs and alcohol, don't take long. Because after a while, you're not having fun. You can always tell when us old hippies are getting tired. I'll give you the clue. We all go around saying the same thing. Hey, what's happening? Now, we're not being hip. We're asking you a question. What's happening? When I said to you, what's happening, man, I mean, what's happening? What's happening? And I say, if you are new here tonight and you pursue that, you know, chemical serenity, for a long period of time, you will eventually arrive where I arrive. And that's no place at all. And there's two things you're scared of. One is you might live and the other is you might die. When you're afraid of living and you're afraid of dying, you're in a bad place. And the only thing you know, if you're like me, is you take something. Either drink it, swallow it, or whatever. And that's the only answer there is. You put it right here. It's the answer to all the problems. Relief is just a swallow away. And the last time I came home, knocked on my own door, my first wife let me in. I weighed about 116 pounds. And I'm standing there about half dead. Honey, you'd have thought I'd been out having a world of fun. And I was dying, standing in my own doorway. And she let me in. Of course, I lived there. And for some reason, and Elsa was talking about it, was just about that time, somebody from Al-Anon, and it just started, Eddie Somi, or somebody got a hold of her, and they told her that she had drawn a concept of this guy she was stuck with, which was not anything what it really was at all. She thought I was a no-good, SOB, worthless, everything. She couldn't think of enough bad names about this guy who was starving his kids to death, who had wine in the refrigerator, no milk, and little infants. And they told her that I was an alcoholic, that I had a disease called alcoholism. But they said the big problem is that you can know, but the magic is to get him to know. Because if you tell him you're an alcoholic, he'll spend the rest of his life, whatever short time that may be, trying to prove to you that he isn't. You've got to let him find it out himself. And all she said to me was, do you want to help yourself?
Man, I'm about half dead. I said, I'll do anything.
I'll do anything. God, I'll do anything. And she handed me a little card and had two letters on it, AA. Because I knew what that was, ancient age. And she said, that's Alcoholics Anonymous. I never heard of it. Besides, what has that got to do with me? I'm a double-hip, cool, slick dude. Was having a little trouble, a little bad luck. But for some reason, I had to be at the right place at the right time. I'd like to say I ran down and called. Really would. But I don't know about you, but the hardest thing in the world, and I say to any of you, I don't care if you've been sober 55 years or 55 minutes, I have watched and observed. Those of us who have been sober, we have watched and observed. And we're convinced that it's easier to stay sober than it is to get sober. I don't know how anybody gets sober. I wouldn't want to try it again. Because I don't know how you do it. If somebody called me on the phone tonight drunk and said, how do you get sober? I'd say, I don't know, go kick a cop. I have no idea. Because you're going to have one more beer because of the whips. And as my main man says, I'm here tonight and I can't stay sober. I can't stay sober. Ain't no way. Ain't no way in the world, you know. I can stay sober. Even all day. Ain't no way in the world I can do it. Yet I went down the next morning and I called. There used to be a guy down there named John Carroll in Los Angeles who answered the phone. And all he said was, Alcoholic Anonymous. I said, I know a guy with a drinking problem. He said, how long has Benson had a drink? I said, all day today. He said, we'll send somebody over. You know, they didn't ask me whether I was tall or short, intellectual or moronic. Of course, we just talked to me a couple more minutes, he'd have known. I said, dumb when I got here. I was here 3 years and still saying anonymity. Now I can say it, anonymity. He come back. Little guy with no teeth today, gray hair, humping his back. I was over to Burbank about 3 months ago. They had a 35th anniversary over there. I went over there, and there he was, a guy named Johnny. Knocked on my door. Now, you know, when you've got a double hip, cool, slick dude, you don't send some lame out to see him. Particularly with some guy with his hair cut clear up to here. I could see both his ears. I knew he was nowhere. And he used strange words like, how are you today? And yup, and gol darn, and gosh. And words I never use, like house and woman and automobile. He just took one look at me, and I know what Johnny must have thought. What in the hell is this? He'd made 12-step calls, but he never made one like that. And there I was, my pants up to here, D.A. hairdo laying on the floor, saying, hey, what's happening? And all he said to me, when he realized, like, you know, you remember Cool Hand Luke? I think we have a failure here to communicate. He said, we have an excellent speaker in Burbank on Friday night. I hope he can make it. And he split. I mean, he split. I heard him going. He said, no way. But you know that that was December the 2nd, 1951, and I haven't had a drink since? No, that can't happen. I'll tell you why it can't happen. For the simple reason, there's anything in the world more frightening to an insecure, inadequate, homely, pimples on his face, big nose, tear top hair, and liver lips than to walk around sober all the time. The best I ever came up with was that I just became a nuisance. I wanted to be bad, man, walk the big yard and have them guys say, stay away from him, he's bad. He used to get arrested on corners for having wet drawers, like me. Some little lady officer, he's got his fly open. Would you go get him? Yeah. That's not bad. Maybe amoral. Not even immoral. You've got to have morals to be immoral, you know. Amoral, you know, like a dog. But I showed up at Burbank on Friday night. And I met a guy at the door with a scar on his face. His name was Eddie McD. Scar on his face. Bull in a china closet. Absolutely. Couldn't drive a car without bumping into something. And I don't know, you know, I'm one of these kind of guys that has finally learned in Alcoholics Anonymous that coincidence is God working anonymously. I know that now. I didn't know that before. Why was Eddie standing there? Because you know when you go to your first meeting, you got the problems. I mean, there's a lightweight. I mean, I got problems. I got no job. I got no car. My dog won't even look at me. I'm in bad shape. And I walk up to Big Eddie McD, standing there like this. Now, this was a bull in the china closet, this guy. He spent more time in the penitentiary, you know, than I spent on this planet. He had a habit of writing checks that he didn't have any funds on. You know, they found on that. He even signed his own name, and I asked him one day after, I said, why are you signing your own name? And only an alcoholic would give this answer. He said, I really meant to pay it back. You get busy when you're drinking. And I wanted to let him know that I wasn't really that bad. And so I told him, I said, well, you know, I got to go to jail. I had a little thing called a 502. You know what they are? I might even get a weekend or something like that, and I'm really going to go to jail. And he said to me, sit down and shut up, punk. He'd just done, you know, about 3 or 4 years in some penitentiary, you know. I said, yeah, but I might lose my kids. Now, I go out for weeks at a time. I don't know whether they're dead or alive. Now, all of a sudden, I'm worried about my kids. He said, I said, sit down and shut up, punk. I found out that he hadn't seen his kids for 7 or 8 or 9 years. Didn't even have any idea where they were. And for some miraculous, coincidental reason in Alcoholics Anonymous, somebody found them. And they stayed with him until I grew up. I was trying to tell him how heavy I was. Now, I had another paradoxical advantage at my first meeting. Those of you that are intelligent have a problem. Because you can think. But when you can't think, man, you've got a much better chance. Because our speaker for that night was my main man. Now, he must have talked up there for, I don't know. I've heard Chuck go as much as 30 or 40 minutes. I never heard what he said. That isn't why I'm sitting there like this. I don't even know what's going on. Now I'm in this room with all these old, funny folks, and they all got ties on. I got one on again tonight. They're all sitting there like this, and I couldn't figure it out. Got Clyde D., you know, who's been sober forever now, Uncle Clyde. And the gal that runs the friendly house, hi, y'all, she was there. OB, they were all there. And this guy's up there talking. Oh, what he's saying? He's laughing. He kept saying, Now, I couldn't see anything funny about sitting in this old graveyard with all these old people. You know, I wonder if, you know, ambulances were going to come and get them. But I couldn't even figure out what they were all laughing about and what he was laughing about. What's so funny? You know, anything funny about it until I discovered one day, much time later, it's funny as hell when you're laughing about something that used to happen. It ain't so funny when it's still going on, you know what I mean? You're going down a tube, you know. Don't flush, you know, one of them feelings. Now, where I come from, men are men. We're tough. Women cry. Us men, you know, you can jump on our foot, but we don't cry. We're tough. That guy was up there crying. And I thought to myself, what the hell's going on here? And there was a little lady sitting on my right. She was bubbling away, and I'm thinking, what in the hell's going on here? And then he said this. He said, it's terrific. Then I knew what it was. That old dude's on something. Did you ever see anybody take any real good heroin around 6 or 7 or 8%? Watch. That's terrific. That's projectile regurgitation. My mother drank bourbon like this. That's terrific. That's boom. I knew he was on something. What you on, baby? Program attraction, isn't it? I want to find out what it was. I was there when Narcotics Anonymous started. I was there. There were 5 of us at the first meeting. I was there. And all the people we got at the first meetings of Narcotics Anonymous were all heroin addicts. The hardest thing in the world to explain to a heroin addict is that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is what does it. They want to cook it up. You got to get it in here. And the reason I talk about that is because alcohol is a drug. And I've met a lot of alcoholics trying to figure out how to get it in here. If you're new, there's nothing in the world that will drive you crazier than having somebody that's been around, particularly about 5 years. That's when we're really in. We got our own group by then. And they'll lay this on you. We got one guy quotes page by page in our group. Nobody will talk to him. I don't care what you got a flat tire. It's in the book. In the book. It's always in the damn book. You say that one more time, I'll bust you in the mouth. I've been here 30 years and 6 months. It's in the book. That's where it is. In the book. Page 37 shows you how to change the tire. It really does. Doesn't mean you have to like it. You can be on the freeway at 3 o'clock in the morning coming back from a meeting being spiritual. And it's raining and you're changing the tire and you find the spare is flat. And you're still serene. You are crazy. You are now so spiritual, you're no earthly good. What I learned here, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and one of the two men who is responsible for us all being here, I think he's here tonight, and that's Bill, said that my disease is not alcohol, and or marijuana, or and or uppers or downers, and or Valium or anything else. My disease is self-centered fear. My disease is total and complete preoccupation with self. My disease is that I was go through life with my eyeballs in backwards saying, me, 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 I. If only you straighten out, I'd be okay. I have a little sign on my mirror at home. My wife has one on hers. And what it says, you're looking at the problem. Years has some advantages, and I'll tell you why. It's because the last page of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, more will be revealed to you. And it has nothing to do with you've been here 5 years, 10 years. When I came in here, the oldest guy in AA was 16. That was Bill. You know, Chuck was really an old-timer. He had about six, you know. Joe from Tennessee, you know, 6 years. They were old-timers. They told us, keep coming back. Now, these are the old-timers. Imagine 16-year-olds. Can you imagine a book like this being written by 2-year-olds? Can you imagine if we didn't have a book, we were going to write one tonight, we'd get all the 1-year-olds to write it? We get the guys a little experience now. Well, not them rookies wrote it. And Bill said the self-centered fear, but I've discovered with time that it even goes deeper. I find out that my disease, I don't know about yours. I heard Elsa talking about it today. Made me cry. It's unworthiness. See, I know I'm unworthy. I'm unworthy. I know that. Smoke them weed, drink that booze, and then I'm not unworthy anymore. I'm just as good as you are. The only problem is I can't stay there very long. And then I'm worse than I was. Then I got to try to get back, and I don't remember where I was. I have that feeling of unworthiness. And I have a disease called preoccupation with me so bad that I don't even know you're there. People could bleed and I don't even know it. I'm so involved and so wrapped up in myself, I don't even know what's going on with anybody else in the whole world. And what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous, we have a common denominator. Any of you who happen to be in World War II, or maybe in some of the others, something happens, and if you remember, I remember people from all nationalities, all ethnic backgrounds, all walks of life, intellectual levels, got together in those trenches, man. And there was some kind of bond, some kind of camaraderie that you don't find in society. The only time I've seen it in the last 20 years, except here, is when they had the audacity to hold our boys over there in Vietnam, over there in that. We all said, let's get our boys back. We all got together and we got to, let's do it. But we had a common bond. And I come here and didn't even know we had one. You know, I have a common bond here. Whether you're boy or girl or tall or short, fat or skinny, smart or dumb, professional or whatever, if you have my disease, we have something in common. And as my friend, the judge, who my friend Jimmy and me love so much from Ventura, Dick Eaton, used to say, we lost him a couple of years ago. He said that when one alcoholic starts sharing in love with another alcoholic, he said some spiritual process starts right then and there, and it can't happen any other way. All it takes is one alcoholic sharing with another alcoholic in love, and something starts happening. It couldn't happen any other way. I remember hearing Dick say that the last time I ever saw him alive. And I thought to myself, by God, it's true. It really is true. We do it and we know we're doing it, and you can't be here any time at all. And that's why having a group somewhere, I've got one on Saturday in Pomona I go to. I wouldn't miss it. It's a book study meeting. I'm there every Saturday, man. I'm there. I even got me a new 23-year-old baby. Calls me on the phone all the time. 23 years old. We go to that. I said, go to that meeting. What do you want? I said, go to that meeting. He didn't show up last week. I said, how come you weren't at the meeting? He's sober 23 years. And the reason I'm there is because that I have a group that I belong to that is mine. That's my group. I don't mean that it's, they don't call it the Eddie group. Matter of fact, newcomers say, how long have you been sober? And I say, you so I'm not going to tell you, you know. The funny thing. But somewhere along the line, it happened to me. I didn't know it. I couldn't understand why it is, and today it even amazes me. Why do you love me when I don't love me? How come you like me and I don't like me? And yet my great problem in life is the fact that I feel unloved. Nobody's ever loved me. I go to motels and all they want is my body. I ain't got that good a body. How come I never feel love? As my friend Bobby E. always says, if mommy don't love you, and daddy don't love you, there ain't nobody ever going to love you. Then they know what they say, you're going to find out one day that they don't love you. They're going to see your liver lips. They're going to see your carrot top hair and your big nose. And they're going to tell you to get out. They're going to go get a real man who looks like Earl Flynn or Robert Redford or something like that. But you know you're here in this fellowship, and they tell you some heavy things. You know, being a sponsor is really exciting because you don't have to be a brilliant man to be a sponsor. I find out all you need to be a sponsor, one thing you really should have is an automobile with two seats. That helps. And all you got to do, and I find, is you don't even have to know what it is, just where. Just put them in the seat, if you're new. Put them in the seat, and you lay heavy things on them like this. Keep coming back. First things first. Easy does it. Live and let live. Read the big book. Go to a lot of meetings and don't drink. Now, they'll go on drink anyway, and they don't get it, but you do. They don't get it. So you're like, why, he didn't get it. And you go to another meeting, and there you are. But one day along the line, somebody comes up to you and reaches into your preoccupation and says something to you like, would you be my sponsor? And you know, well, I'm no Bill Wilson or anything like that. Maybe a Dr. Bob, but I'm, you know. So you do. You be their sponsor. What is a sponsor but a friend who can communicate to somebody of the same gender? Very important. The same gender is very, I find it's very important because nothing gets in the way, pardon the expression. Very, very difficult for me to make a 12-step call on somebody with a low-cut blouse. I get distracted from spiritual matters. So I don't do that. Boys call on boys and girls call on girls for obvious reasons. But I had a guy come into the Burbank group and ask me that question. Now, you don't know, you know. You take them and 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 you take them. And you know the funny thing I can't believe? I see people here, they say, I was sober now 5 years. God, I just met him yesterday. What do you mean 5 years? I just saw you at the first meeting. What do you mean 5 years? And somewhere along the line, they'll come up to you and say, I'm getting my cake. Next Friday night at the Burbank group, would you get in the cake? Now, I don't know if any of you have given out any cakes. I know a lot of you have. And it's not anything that you can express. Because here comes, and this baby that I had, the one in particular, is not my kind of guy. I mean, he's about that tall, he's about that broad, he's from New Jersey, he talks this, that, and those, and them. He's tough, he breaks noses, and he you know, I'm scared of him, you know. I tell him, get in the car, please.
I mean, he was tough.
And I lit that cake with that one candle on it. He come walking up to me, and I swear to God, he had tears in his eyes. He put his arms around me, and he gave me a kiss on the cheek. He said, "Bet, I love you." I kissed him on the cheek, and I said, "Jack, I love you. And do you know something? In my entire lifetime, for the first time ever, I experienced love." I didn't know what it was. I'm the slightest idea. You know, I couldn't find it. I didn't know what it was. How can you find something you don't know what it is? And I felt it because for a moment there, for the first time in my whole life, I was totally and completely free of myself. In the fact that I felt love for this man. I find that it's so much easier to love another male alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous than it is to love anybody else in the world. The hardest person in the world to learn to love is the one you got at home. It's very difficult to be big at home. I just flew in from Jamaica. Very difficult, you know. Try to take the dog suit off. Very difficult to hang it up at home. I find out that the most difficult thing in the world for the unworthy is to spend too much time under a roof with the same person, because eventually they're going to see the liberal lips. Even today, after all the years I've been with Ginny, I don't just go to the bathroom like other people. I dance out of the room. But you know, she dances out of the room, too. But it's all right. Mommy and Daddy are not watching. When I find out, it's a program of progress. It's right where it's supposed to be. So I've heard it said by those of you who are here, my man. It's an inside job. It has something to do with in here. It has nothing to do with where I live, what I drive, or anything else. It has to do with in here. This is where I put the alcohol. This is where I put the drugs. And if I stay here over a long period of time, I spend more time out of me and thinking of you. Left alone to my own devices, I immediately retreat to my prison called myself, which includes such things as nobody loves me, nobody wants me, what's the use? But if I stick with you for some strange reason, I find out that we do grow in the area that I must grow in, and if I don't grow, I'm going to die. As I've heard also, heard it said here, I either go forward or I go back. I can't stand dead still. And I don't know of anyone, you know, and it says it in the book, and I don't know of anyone in this room who is tickled to death about it, but it says in the book, the pain is the touchstone. I don't know why we can't skip the happy road of destiny. They say trudge. But pain, and my wife says, and I love this, she said, if pain is the touchstone, and in the book it says, we will be rocketed into a new dimension. She said, the pain will be probably be the fuel. Because I don't grow unless I get kicked. I don't grow unless I hurt. I don't grow unless I am not running the show. If I can run the show, man, one thing I am so tickled to death about tonight is that I do not have $500,000, you know, and a $150,000 car parked out there. Because if I had a $150,000 car parked out there, and I had a home up on the hill, you know, with an Olympic-sized swimming pool, I doubt very seriously if I'd need you. I'd probably send you signed autographed copies of the big book. Every time I get it together, God takes away all the pieces. I can go to bed at night just absolutely all together as spiritual as you can possibly be. As a matter of fact, I'm almost ready to go to Catalina. I get up in the morning and God takes all the pieces away. Because I don't have nothing to do with it. And you don't know you're learning to love here. You really don't know you are. You know you don't know you are. You've got to keep coming back. You keep coming back. And the one area where I am the most efficient is in my ability to love you and accept your love in return. I can do a lot of things. I can make money. I've done it. I can drive new cars all the time. I've done it. But it has nothing to do with the way I feel on the inside. And about 2 years ago, I went to a Narcotics Anonymous meeting to talk in Venice. One of my little buddies, matter of fact, he's in the room tonight, Bobby, came up to me and he said, "Did you hear?" I said, "Did I hear what?" He said, "They found Eddie in his chair with his legs crossed and he was dead." I said, "You got to be kidding." He said, "They found him." I said, "No, you, no way. You know, I mean, I can, he's talking in my ear right now. Ain't no way. Ain't no way." You know, you don't accept something like that when you hear something like that. You don't accept it. Nah. Nobody stole my car. You don't believe it. But how, the next day, I go down to the Sunday morning meeting in Covina. And on the way from that meeting, on the way back, my wife and me are driving on the way home, and I start blubbering and start crying so hard it couldn't stop. And it just wouldn't stop. So when I got home, I got on the phone and I called Laguna Beach. And I asked for Chuck. And I said, "Did you hear? Eddie's dead and I can't stop crying." He said, "I can't either." I said, "Well, how come I can't stop crying? My mother died and I didn't cry. I thought, well, it's better off. The old girl's sick. She's dead. She got cirrhosis of the liver. God will take care of her. Isn't that nice?" My dad died, same thing. I've never felt that before. And I'm bawling. And you know what he told me? He said, "I had grief. I wonder what the hell that was." He says, "You learned a lot. Welcome to the fellowship. Sometimes loving hurts, but you've learned to love." Then a friend of mine, my baby, got 20 years. His wife, his little sweet little Al-Anon wife, Ramona, one day went to the doctor and they told her she had terminal cancer. And at least three or four times a week, I would go down to the hospital to see Ramona, and she kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller. She just kind of drifted away to where there almost wasn't anything there. And I'd get in my car and I'd drive from where she was to Glendora. And I'd be riding along the freeway just bored. I never did that before in my life. But you know, I knew for the first time in my life it was okay. And the reason it was okay is because I was expressing love for somebody that has been removed. And I miss them. And it's okay. And I learned to love. But the best part of Alcoholics Anonymous is the fact we can be successful. We can go out and make money. Man, we are good. We are the best salesmen in the world. I'd sell snowballs to Eskimos, man. We can do anything. I ran a large corporation one time. Man, I don't have an education, you know, to be the janitor. We can do those kind of things, but that's not the area. The area is the feeling of self-worth. I don't like me. I've gone to conventions in Texas, in Arkansas. And after it was all over, I'd go up to my room all by myself and sit there. And I felt alone. And the reason I was alone is because there wasn't anybody applauding anymore. And I couldn't figure out what it was. But I'd get up the next morning and get jumping again. Man, I'll be okay. I'll be all right. And I am. But if you stay here long enough, you learn to love. Would you believe, I'm 61 years of age. I know I look more like 30. My wife says I'm 25. I get off the freeway every night. I sell steel for a living. That's what I do. Don't even know what the hell it was a year ago. I'm selling it. Not for sure I know what it is now, but I still sell it. Yeah, that'll be like 4x8. Yeah, okay, yeah, okay. Well, I hope 58, this guy's talking to me like I know what I'm doing. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, okay. And I sell them. I hope the hell I get them raised up. But I drive home from Long Beach every day in my little old car. Thumps and it bumps and grinds away. You know, go another block. Old Pino that they buried 3 years ago and dug it up. But as I get off that freeway, would you believe that I start getting butterflies in my stomach? You know why I get butterflies in my stomach? Because I'm going to be home in 5 minutes with a woman that I not only love, but I've learned to love because you taught me how. And I know that I can. And I love her every day, some way or another. And when I come home and open that door, unless she's talking to a baby on the phone, she treats me like the finest man who ever lived just walked in the door. And when you're as unworthy as I am, that's very difficult to handle. Because you know it's just a matter of time when she loses the cataracts on her eyes. And she sees those little lips. And that cat's out here and that big nose, there ain't going to be no more of that jazz going on. I've been with her for 5 years now. Our relationship is better. And my wife and me always say, outside of our sobriety, this is the only thing we ever had that continues to get better. And for a man to come home to somebody and to be able to love them, and I heard my men 30 years ago say this, didn't make a bit of sense to me. Matter of fact, it probably didn't make any sense to me until about a year and a half ago. He says, you really don't have anything until you learn how to bring it home. Go to the club. Go to the meetings. Go to the desert roundup. But what do you do when you go home? Do you bring it home with you? I had no idea what he meant. I wouldn't have the slightest idea how to go home and love my woman on a daily basis. But here in Alcoholics Anonymous, I burn out. And the beautiful part is that the unworthiness is still to be resolved to some degree, to the point where I can live with it. Because you know and I know that Alcoholics Anonymous is not overcoming all defects, overcoming all of life's problems, finding ourselves on a plateau where everything is always perfect all the time. What it is learning to live one day at a time with all those problems still unresolved. With a degree of peace and belief that whatever it is that runs this universe can bring you this far isn't going to let you down now. And I'm sitting in my den with my wife. She's sitting in her chair. I'm sitting in mine. And one night I looked over at her, and she had big tears running down her eyes, and she had a little smile on her mouth. And she looked over at me, and this is what she said. She said, Eddie, you're a beautiful man, and I love you very, very much. And I looked into her eyes. And the first time in my whole life, I looked into her eyes, which are actually the eyes of God when you look into somebody else's eyes. And I saw me as I really am, as God had really made me for the first time. And I saw that I was beautiful. I didn't even know that. So I thought you were beautiful. I wish our Chuck was beautiful. Elsa, all the other people, you're all beautiful. I just go along. You just kind of put up with me because I'm funny. I looked into my wife's eyes and I realized I really am. And now I know. And I'd like to pass this along to anyone who's been here less than 30 years and 6 months. The God that obviously is in control of this universe and has developed this fantastic program did not make any junk. There is no junk. None of us are junk. As a matter of fact, I have discovered that God made every one of us on this planet a particular, beautiful individual that has its own particular components, its own brand of sensitivity, its own little thing that has never been here before and will never be here again because it is uniquely different because it is itself. And the difference in being a member of this fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous is that the program slowly over the days and over the weeks and over the months and over the years through the love of the other people to me and then my eventuality of giving my love to them and then eventually accepting the love they're giving to me, I find myself in a position where I know that we're all beautiful. The only difference is that here we get a chance to find out. We get a chance to find out that God didn't make any junk. Now, I say to you, God has given me a great present. And that present happens to be, I'm not a rock or a tree or an ant. I happen to be one of the highest forms of life that's ever been on this planet, a human being. But to be a human being requires special, dedicated application of principles for growth. And that growth has to include the ability to love and to accept love in return. I don't know if any of you remember a man by the name of Nat King Cole. But Nat King Cole wrote a song one time, and I'm riding on the freeway, not too awful long ago, and I started crying. And I'm not the kind that did this. It's all right for Chuck and those guys. I never did that. I'm riding on the freeway listening to this song, and I started crying. And the reason I started crying is because the words of the song had become an actuality to me. And the words of the song were this: the greatest thing you will ever learn is just to love and be loved in return. Now, if there's any more than that to being on this planet, I would rather those of you who are brand new would have it, because I know that there are some here tonight besides myself. We have been given so much inner riches, so much inner wealth in the capacity to love and to be loved in return, that we want to give it to you. And if you know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous, you know this, that the more you try to give this fantastic program away, the more you have to give away. So those of us that you see running around all over the place, the reason we do it is because if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't be anywhere. I'm going to close with something I heard a man say when I first came in here, and it was only a month ago that it, or maybe 2 months ago, it finally began to make sense. I have something tonight that every human being ought to have. I have my very own me, given to me by God, and my me is beautiful, as I know yours is. I have a me now I can go to bed with, get up with, I can be married with, I can work with. I have a beautiful me. And I never will forget what this man said, but I must never forget that the only reason I have a me is because I have you. If I didn't have you, there wouldn't be any me. Thank you very much.